Hidden behind the iron-wrought gates of Highgate Manor, a monstrous secret festered for 7 years. Society believed her dead of consumption, yet she breathed trapped in a gilded cage. Her crime, a face so devastatingly beautiful, it threatened an empire's lineage. This is her forgotten, chilling story. Scandal and vanity have always been the twin poisons of the English aristocracy, but rarely do they manifest as cruelly as they did within the walls of Highgate Manor in the autumn of 1812. Lord Richard Danvers was a man of immense wealth, but entirely devoid of a spine yielding every household decision to his second wife, Lady Vivian. Vivian was a woman whose ambition was matched only by her ruthless vanity. She had one biological daughter, Eleanor, a girl with a sour disposition and profoundly unremarkable features. But Lord Danvers also had a daughter from his first marriage, Cecily. By her 16th birthday, Cecily Danvers had blossomed into a striking anomaly. While the women of her class painted their faces with lead and powder to achieve a fragile sort of prettiness, Cecily possessed an arresting, ethereal beauty. She had hair the color of spun midnight eyes, like fractured sapphires, and a bone structure that seemed carved by a master sculptor. When she entered a room, conversations halted. When she smiled, suitors forgot their own names. For Lady Vivian, this was an unforgivable offense. The London social season was approaching, and Vivian knew that if Cecily were presented at court, Eleanor would be entirely eclipsed. No Duke Earl or wealthy baron would cast a second glance at the plain, spiteful Eleanor while Cecily stood in the same room. A mother's envy is a dangerous beast, and Vivian soon morphed into a terrifying plot. In November, a sudden and mysterious illness befell Highgate Manor. Doctor Arbuthnot, a local physician, known more for his gambling debts than his medical prowess, was summoned. Behind closed oak doors, Vivian handed the desperate doctor a heavy purse of sovereigns. The following morning, the tragic news was announced. The beautiful, beloved Cecily had contracted a highly contagious, aggressive strain of consumption. The household was thrown into a state of terrified panic. Cecily was heavily dosed with laudanum, procured quietly from an apothecary named Mr. Higgins, and dragged from her bright, airy chambers into the desolate, abandoned east wing of the manor. The wing had been shuttered for decades, its windows barred, its grand rooms covered in dust sheets. It was a fortress within a home. A week later, the parish bells of St. Jude's tolled in mourning. Society wept as a sealed coffin, heavy with river stones, was lowered into the Danvers family crypt. Lord Danvers, oblivious to his wife's deceit, and too cowardly to look upon his daughter's ravaged face, grieved heavily. But Cecily was not dead. She awoke in a cold, dim room, her mind thick with narcotics, to find the heavy oak door locked from the outside. Her only contact with the living world was Bridget, an elderly mute servant, bound by loyalty to Vivian, who brought a meager tray of food twice a day. Months bled into years. To prevent herself from descending into madness, Cecily turned her prison into a sanctuary. She read by the faint light that bled through the boarded-up windows, devouring the dusty volumes left behind in the East Wing's abandoned library. She exercised in the cavernous halls, pacing the length of the forgotten ballroom. And eventually she discovered a small mercy, a rusted iron door at the end of a corridor that led to an overgrown, high-walled courtyard garden. It was a suffocating existence. Her beauty, the very thing that had doomed her, remained unseen by the world. She grew from a breathtaking girl into a devastatingly gorgeous woman, her sorrow adding a haunting, tragic depth to her features. She wore outdated threadbare gowns, yet she moved with the grace of a captive queen. She had accepted her fate as the living ghost of Highgate Manor. 5 years passed. Society had long forgotten the tragic death of the Danvers heiress, Helena, despite 3 grueling London seasons and her mother's relentless machinations, remained entirely unwed. Desperation began to claw at Lady Vivian. Fortunes were dwindling, and she needed a triumph. That triumph arrived in the form of Thomas Wentworth, the Duke of Northumberland. Thomas was a man forged in the fires of military duty and political betrayal. At 32, he was devastatingly wealthy, fiercely intelligent, and notoriously cynical. Having recently inherited the neighboring estate of Penrith Hall, he required temporary lodgings while his new roof was being reconstructed. Seeing a golden opportunity, Lady Vivian immediately offered Highgate Manor, transforming her home into a grand stage designed to trap the Duke into a marriage with Eleanor. From the moment his carriage crunched against the gravel driveway, Thomas found the atmosphere of Highgate suffocating. Lady Vivian hovered like a hawk, and Eleanor's desperate attempts at flirtation were as subtle as a firing cannon. Thomas, who had survived the battlefields of Europe, found dodging the Danvers women far more exhausting. To celebrate his arrival, Vivian hosted a lavish masquerade ball, inviting the elite of the county. The grand hall was a riot of silk candlelight and terrible music. Thomas endured 2 excruciating dances with Eleanor, who spent the entirety of both stepping on his polished boots and gossiping venomously about her peers. Suffocated by the perfume and the noise, Thomas slipped away through the French doors. He sought the cool, crisp air of the estate grounds, wandering deeper into the shadows, away from the manicured lawns and the clinking of champagne flutes. He walked for what felt like miles, his sharp eyes taking in the neglected periphery of the estate. He eventually stumbled upon a towering stone wall, thoroughly choked with thick, thorny ivy. It was an odd, brutal structure, completely out of place amidst the elegant landscaping. His curiosity piqued. Thomas traced the length of the wall until he found a heavy iron gate secured with a thick, rusted padlock. But Thomas was observant. The dirt beneath the gate was slightly scuffed, and a single fresh green leaf had been crushed against the iron. Someone had been here. Recently, using the heavy silver hilt of his ceremonial dagger, Thomas leveraged the old decaying padlock. With a sharp crack, the metal gave way. He pushed the heavy gate open, stepping into a wild, untamed courtyard bathed in moonlight. And there she was. Thomas froze, his breath catching in his throat. He was a man who had seen the grandest courts of Europe, yet he had never laid eyes on a creature like the one standing before him. She was standing near a ruined stone fountain, bathed in silver light. She wore a faded, practically colorless gown that slipped off one shoulder, her dark hair cascading down her back like a waterfall of ink. But it was her face that stopped his heart. It was a face of impossible symmetry, possessing a piercing, sorrowful beauty that hit him with the force of a physical blow. Hearing the gate creak, Cecily spun around, her eyes wide with sheer terror. She had not seen a man in 5 years. She staggered backward, her bare feet scraping against the stone, her heart hammering wildly against her ribs. "Who are you?" Thomas demanded, his voice low, gravelly, and echoing in the quiet garden. Cecily could not speak. Her throat, unused to conversation, felt parched. She stared at the towering stranger in his immaculately tailored evening clothes, terrified that Lady Vivian had sent an executioner. "I asked you a question," Thomas said, stepping closer, his imposing frame casting a long shadow. "Are you a trespasser?" "No," Cecily finally whispered, her voice raspy yet melodic. I belong to the shadows. You should not be here, sir. If you are found, I am the Duke of Northumberland," Thomas replied smoothly, his eyes scanning her threadbare clothes, noting how they completely failed to hide her aristocratic posture. I go where I please. But you, you are no servant. Look at your hands. No calluses. Look at your posture. Who are you hiding from? Cecily's breath hitched. She realized the danger she was in. If Vivian discovered she had spoken to a guest, let alone a duke, her meager existence would be extinguished entirely. I am a phantom, she lied, her voice trembling, as she backed toward the heavy oak door leading back into the east wing. A trick of the moonlight. Forget you saw me. Before Thomas could reach out to stop her, she turned and fled the heavy door, slamming shut behind her, the sound of a heavy bolt sliding into place, echoing in the night. Thomas stood alone in the overgrown garden, his mind racing. A trick of the moonlight. Hardly. He walked over to where she had been standing. Glinting in the grass was a small silver object. He bent down and picked it up. It was a tarnished hairpin, bearing the unmistakable intricate crest of the Danvers family. A dark suspicion began to take root in the Duke's mind. Highgate Manor was hiding a secret one, wrapped in faded silk and imprisoned behind stone walls. Meanwhile, inside the manor, Lady Vivian was patrolling the corridors, furious that the Duke had vanished from her party. As she passed the windows overlooking the eastern grounds, she caught a glimpse of movement. She saw the Duke emerging from the forbidden courtyard, holding something silver in his hand. Vivian's blood ran cold. Her meticulously constructed lie, guarded for 5 long years, was suddenly teetering on the edge of a catastrophic collapse. Panic, a cold and suffocating serpent, coiled tightly around Lady Vivian's chest as she watched the Duke of Northumberland retreat from the forbidden courtyard. Her meticulous 7-year deception, a lie that had guaranteed her daughter's unchallenged position in society, was suddenly dangling by a thread. Vivian knew she had to act with absolute ruthlessness. The Duke was not a man to be trifled with. His military record at Waterloo and his sharp, calculating demeanor meant he would not easily let go of a mystery. She needed Cecily removed from Highgate Manor immediately, not merely locked away, but vanished entirely. The following morning, under the guise of ordering new silks for Eleanor, Vivian dispatched a frantic sealed letter to London. It was addressed to Dr. Percival Graves, the notorious head physician at St. Luke's Hospital for Lunatics. St. Luke's was a brutal, unforgiving institution, where the forgotten souls of England were chained to damp walls and subjected to horrific cures. For a terrifyingly high sum of 300 guineas, Dr. Graves agreed to send a discreet, unmarked carriage in 3 days' time to collect a violent, deeply disturbed female relative who required permanent anonymous institutionalization. Meanwhile, Thomas Wentworth was conducting a quiet siege of his own. The Duke's suspicion had crystallized into a chilling certainty. At breakfast, he casually steered the conversation toward Lord Danvers's past, specifically inquiring about his family history. The weak-willed Lord Danvers immediately dissolved into tears, speaking at length of his beautiful, tragic daughter Cecily, who had supposedly perished of an aggressive consumption in November of 1812. Thomas's keen mind rapidly assembled the pieces of the puzzle. The timeline. Cecily died just before her societal debut, exactly when Eleanor would have been forced to compete with her. The artifact. The tarnished silver hairpin he found in the courtyard bore the Danvers crest. The captive. The woman in the garden was not a ghost nor a servant. Her aristocratic bearing, her age, and her impossible beauty aligned perfectly with the descriptions of the late Cecily Danvers. Determined to uncover the absolute truth, Thomas enlisted his most trusted confidant, his valet and former cavalry sergeant, a fiercely loyal Irishman named O'Brien. While Thomas distracted the household, O'Brien expertly mapped the exterior of the East Wing, discovering that the windows were not merely boarded up, but reinforced with heavy iron nails, and the servant's entrance was double padlocked. That night, a violent thunderstorm rolled over the English countryside, masking all sounds beneath the roar of rain and thunder. Thomas, cloaked in heavy dark wool, returned to the iron gate of the courtyard. He picked the lock with the practiced ease of a soldier who had spent years bypassing French blockades. He found her huddled beneath the stone archway of the ruined fountain, shivering violently in her thin, threadbare gown. When he approached, she did not run. Exhaustion and despair had anchored her to the freezing stone. "You returned," Cecily whispered, her voice barely audible over the driving rain. Thomas stripped off his heavy, dry cloak and wrapped it securely around her trembling shoulders. "I am not a man who leaves mysteries unsolved," he said gently, his gravelly voice offering a stark contrast to the vicious storm. "Especially not when they involve living women buried in the dark. Your name is Cecily Danvers, isn't it?" Cecily squeezed her eyes shut, a single tear escaping to mix with the rain on her pale cheek. Hearing her own name spoken aloud for the first time in over half a decade struck her like a physical blow. "Cecily Danvers is dead," she choked out. "She was buried in the family crypt 7 years ago. My stepmother made certain of it." Over the next hour, huddled together beneath the stone archway, Cecily poured out her horrific tale. She spoke of the sudden illness, the heavy doses of laudanum, the agonizing realization that her father had abandoned her, and the terrifying endless years of isolation in the dusty, rotting halls of the East Wing. She explained how her beauty had been her death sentence, a fatal flaw in Lady Vivian's grand, ambitious design for Eleanor. Thomas listened, his jaw clenched so tightly it ached. He had witnessed the darkest depravities of men on the battlefields of the peninsula, but the calculated domestic cruelty inflicted upon this innocent woman ignited a murderous rage within him. "She told me," Cecily whispered, looking up at him with her fractured sapphire eyes, "that if I ever tried to escape, if I ever showed my face to the world, she would have me thrown into bedlam. She said the world belongs to the ruthless, and I was merely a fragile porcelain doll meant to be locked in a cabinet." "Lady Vivian is severely mistaken about how the world works," Thomas replied, his voice dangerously soft. He reached out his thumb, gently wiping away a streak of dirt from her cheek, marveling at the sheer, devastating perfection of her features, despite her wretched condition. "And she is about to learn that I am far more ruthless than she could ever aspire to be." Before he could finalize a plan to smuggle her out, the heavy scrape of iron boots echoed from the corridor inside the manor. Vivian had accelerated her timeline. Rainwater lashed violently against the heavy oak door as it shuddered on its rusted hinges. "They are coming for me," Cecily gasped, sheer panic, seizing her fragile, trembling frame. The sanctuary of the courtyard had instantly transformed back into a cage. Thomas Wentworth did not flinch. He reached inside his heavy wool coat and drew a gleaming, double-barreled flintlock pistol, the mechanism clicking sharply into place. "Stay entirely behind me," he commanded, his voice, a low, dangerous growl that cut through the thunder. The door burst open with a violent crack. Standing in the threshold were two massive, unsavory brutes hired by Dr. Percival Graves, carrying heavy iron shackles that clanked ominously. Behind them, shielded from the rain, stood Lady Vivian. She held a flickering oil lantern, her face twisted into a mask of pure, unadulterated malice. "I knew you were far too inquisitive, Your Grace." Vivian spat, her eyes darting between the Duke and the trembling woman behind him. "But you are trespassing on highly sensitive private family matters. The girl is violently insane. She is a danger to herself and others. These gentlemen from St. Luke's are merely taking her to a medical sanctuary where she can receive proper, restrictive care." You are a monster, Vivian, Thomas snarled, leveling the heavy pistol directly at the chest of the largest thug. If either of your hired apes takes one single step closer to this woman, I will put a lead ball straight through his heart. And then, Lady Vivian, I will have you arrested for kidnapping, forced imprisonment, and high treason against the crown for falsifying a parish death registry. The thugs paid handsomely, but certainly not enough to die facing down a war-hardened duke known for his lethal marksmanship, hesitated. They immediately backed away, their eyes fixed on the steady barrel of the flintlock. Vivian's face completely drained of color. O'Brien, Thomas roared into the stormy night. From the shifting shadows of the garden walls, the towering Irish valet emerged wielding a massive iron crowbar. The element of surprise was utterly lost, Vivian realizing her absolute defeat, and facing armed, highly trained men, dropped the lantern. It shattered spectacularly on the wet stones, plunging the doorway into sudden darkness as she hiked up her skirts and fled in terror back into the manor. Bring the carriage around to the perimeter road immediately, Thomas ordered O'Brien, holstering his weapon. He turned back to Cecily, who was staring at him with wide, disbelieving eyes. Without another word, he lifted her effortlessly into his arms, carrying her away from the nightmare. You are leaving this prison tonight, Cecily, and I swear to you upon my very life, you are never coming back. Thomas did not take Cecily to a local county inn, where Vivian might easily track them, or use her local influence to summon the magistrate. Instead, he ordered his coachman to drive relentlessly through the night, pushing the horses toward his heavily fortified palatial townhouse in Grosvenor Square, London. For Cecily, the interior of the ducal carriage was an overwhelming sensory shock. After 7 years of hard floors, cold drafts and threadbare cotton, the plush velvet seats, the thick fur rugs, and the gentle warmth of the carriage heaters felt entirely alien. She huddled in the corner, wrapped completely in Thomas's heavy wool cloak, her exhausted mind struggling to comprehend that the endless nightmare had finally broken. When they arrived at Grosvenor Square the following morning, Thomas immediately enacted a wall of absolute silence and security around his home. He dismissed half the staff, retaining only those whose loyalty had been proven in blood and time. For the next 3 weeks, Cecily remained hidden from the world, but this time her seclusion was a sanctuary of profound luxury safety and meticulous healing. Thomas hired Dr. Harrison, the finest and most discreet physician in London, to tend to her severe malnutrition and fading strength. He employed a small army of trusted modistes, led by the brilliant Madame Delacroix, to construct a wardrobe befitting royalty, utilizing the finest silks, velvets, and laces imported from Paris. Slowly, the haunted, shivering ghost of Highgate Manor began to fade. In her place, a woman of staggering, unparalleled beauty began to bloom once more. Her midnight hair regained its lustrous, heavy shine, her pale, translucent skin warmed with a healthy, radiant glow. But Thomas knew that physical recovery was only half the battle. He spent every evening with her in his grand, cavernous library, refusing to treat her as a fragile, broken victim. Instead, he engaged her sharp intellect. They debated history, dissected philosophy, and shared quiet, profound moments by the roaring hearth. Thomas spoke of the horrors he had witnessed on the battlefields of Waterloo, and Cecily found the courage to articulate the crushing despair of her isolation. Amidst the leather-bound books and the safety of the firelight, an undeniable, fiercely passionate romance blossomed between the scarred, cynical duke and the brilliant, unbreakable survivor. Simply rescuing Cecily was never going to be enough for Thomas Wentworth. Lady Vivian had stolen 7 years of an innocent woman's life. She required complete public annihilation. To orchestrate this downfall, Thomas sought the counsel of Mr. Henry Brougham, a notoriously ruthless barrister and political ally. Together they meticulously compiled the evidence, the falsified death certificate, the bribery of the local apothecary, and sworn testimonies from O'Brien and Doctor Harrison regarding Cecily's condition upon her rescue. However, a quiet courtroom trial would allow Vivian to spin lies and gather sympathizers. They needed a stage. They needed a public spectacle so grand, so undeniably absolute, that Vivian's social destruction would be instantaneous and irreversible. The perfect opportunity arrived at the absolute zenith of the London social season, the grand spring ball at Almack's Assembly Rooms. Almack's was the fiercely guarded beating heart of high society, ruled by the terrifying patroness, Lady Sarah Jersey. Vivian and Eleanor were confirmed to be in attendance, desperately attempting to secure a wealthy match for Eleanor, before the whispers of Thomas's abrupt, scandalous departure from Highgate Manor ruined their standing completely. The ballroom at Almack's was a glittering, suffocating sea of diamonds, heavy silk, and whispered, venomous gossip. Lady Vivian stood triumphantly near the orchestra, sipping champagne and loudly boasting to a captive audience of bored countesses about Eleanor's entirely fabricated skills on the pianoforte. Suddenly, the grand double doors of the assembly room swung open with a resounding crash. The heavy rhythmic thumping of the orchestra abruptly faltered, dying away into a few confused string notes. A shocking heavy silence, thick and absolute, cascaded over the crowded room. Standing poised at the top of the grand sweeping staircase was the Duke of Northumberland. But it was the woman, resting her gloved hand lightly on his arm, who commanded the breath of every single soul in the room. Cecily Danvers was a terrifying vision of devastating, absolute perfection. She wore a bespoke gown of deep midnight blue velvet that matched the exact rich shade of her hair. The magnificent Wentworth diamonds, a legendary parure of sapphires and diamonds that had not been seen in public for a generation, glittered like trapped furious stars against her flawless porcelain skin. She held her head high, her fractured sapphire eyes sweeping across the sea of astonished faces with the serene, unyielding confidence of a conquering empress. Whispers erupted like a wildfire racing through dry timber. People completely forgot their manners, staring openly. Then Lord Richard Danvers, who had been standing near the crystal punch bowl, dropped his glass. It shattered loudly against the polished parquet floor, the sound ringing out like a gunshot in the quiet room. He stared at the majestic apparition at the top of the stairs, all the blood draining instantly from his face. "Cecily," he gasped, his voice carrying clearly across the silent hall. "Merciful heavens, Cecily." The crowd parted violently, stepping back as if burned, as Thomas led Cecily slowly, deliberately down the stairs. He walked her straight toward Lady Vivian, whose champagne flute had slipped from her trembling fingers. Vivian's face had contorted into a mask of pure, unadulterated terror. She looked exactly as if she had seen a corpse rise from the grave. "Good evening, Lady Vivian," Thomas said, his rich, gravelly voice amplified in the dead silence, ensuring the highly influential Lady Jersey heard every single syllable. "I believe you lost something in the abandoned, boarded-up east wing of your country estate, 7 years ago, to be precise." The ensuing fallout was explosive, a catastrophic scandal that shook the very foundations of the English aristocracy for decades. Confronted by the living, breathing, magnificent proof of her monstrous crime, Vivian's grand, meticulously constructed facade completely and utterly collapsed. Under the immediate threat of severe legal prosecution, championed by Henry Brougham, who stepped forward from the crowd with warrants in hand, Vivian was forced to confess the entire horrifying truth before the highest peers of the realm. Justice was swift and utterly merciless. Lord Danvers, deeply horrified by his own willful ignorance and his wife's immense calculating cruelty, immediately banished Vivian and Eleanor. with their finances completely severed and their social standing utterly annihilated, the two women were forced into a humiliating permanent exile in a damp, decaying one-room cottage in the freezing Scottish Highlands, forever cast out from the glittering world they had so desperately tried to conquer. Cecily, meanwhile, effortlessly reclaimed her rightful place in the sun, but she cared absolutely nothing for the fickle adoration of London society, nor the countless apologies of the people who had forgotten her. She cared only for the man who had walked bravely into the darkness and shattered her heavy iron chains. A month later, beneath the grand sweeping stone arches of St. Margaret's Westminster, Cecily Danvers officially became the Duchess of Northumberland. As Thomas slipped the heavy gold band onto her finger, he looked deeply into her sapphire eyes, no longer fractured by sorrow, but blazing with brilliant, radiant, victorious life. They had both survived their respective brutal wars, and together they built a lasting legacy of immense love and unwavering, fierce protection, proving eternally that the most devastating beauty is not found merely in a painted face, but in an unbroken, triumphant spirit that finally steps boldly into the light. If you were completely captivated by this thrilling tale of dark betrayal, incredible survival, and ultimate revenge, make sure to hit that like button to support these historical dramas. Share this incredible story with your friends who love epic romance and thrilling societal scandals. Do not forget to subscribe to our channel and ring the notification bell so you never miss another deep journey into the hidden, scandalous secrets of the past. Leave a comment below telling us your absolute favorite twist in the narrative.